I'm going to talk to you about a project that really is the culmination of 2.5 decades of work in collaboration with Steve Naranjo at USDA ARS. It was capped by our PhD student, Tim Vandervoet, who's now in New Zealand, pursuing his professional career, and then supported by Naomi Peer and Isadora Bordini as extension educators and students of mine. So Whitefly IPM is really based in the same three keys that are important in the IPM of any insect pest, and that is sampling effective chemical use on a solid foundation of avoidance or prevention practices. In Arizona, we've really focused a lot on natural enemy conservation as being central to that foundation layer of avoidance. And we've invested a lot of resources to screen chemistry, not just for efficacy, but for their selectivity and safety towards natural enemies. And that's helped our growers understand the integration between these two layers of effective chemical use and avoidance. The talk that I'm going to give today is going to focus on biological control informed thresholds. And so now that's the integration of sampling action thresholds that are pest centric, as well as the natural enemy conservation in the system. Well, if you were particularly astute and read your program, you might have recognized a similarly titled paper that was in the other session about an hour ago by my co-author, Steve Naranjo. Our original intent were these to be back-to-back. Somehow we ended up in two different sessions, an hour apart, but he covered what we published in Journal of EconEnt a year ago that really went into the mechanics of how we developed the biocontrol-informed threshold. So just a quick review, I'm not going to go over all this, but we went through manipulative studies, we isolated important predators that were related to whitefly biological control, formed predator to prey ratios for six different species, creating eight different thresholds, ratio-based thresholds, optimized those for decision making, and then as part of this project, and what I'm going to cover, we did commercial validation of the work, and then did a lot of demonstration and outreach. Now there's a lot that goes into this piece of it as well, but and I'm not going to have time to talk about all these things, but we do have commercial and experimental validations done in the field. We also work directly with pest control advisors both in Arizona and in northern Mexico, collected data directly from their fields or used their data that they were collecting from their fields, and we piloted our outreach program to understand where the difficulties might be. But ultimately, we invested a lot of resources in the last year to formally launch this program, supported by publications in both English and Spanish, and deployed those in actually six U.S. And Mexican states. So this is really all I'm going to say about the validation, and it's not a lot, but these are predator-prey ratios. So the idea is, instead of just relying on the density of your pests in the system, we're now going to count predators and understand the ratio between the two of them to recalibrate our spray decisions. And when we look at the data from our Arizona PCAs or our Mexican PCAs, we can see that the majority of the time their decisions would have changed if they'd used the predator to prey ratios. We also have a historical data set going back 14 years at our location in Maricopa, and we can see that if we reclass these data, most of them would end up in a deferring of the spray. Sometimes we would have advanced the spray, and of course sometimes the decision wouldn't have changed. Now we're in a very selective and low spray environment in Arizona cotton. This is the history of the number of sprays required to control all of our insect pests, including whiteflies, pink bollworms, ligus bugs, and all else. And over time, we've seen that progressively decline through the introduction of important selective technologies like BT cotton and insect growth regulators and other materials for whitefly control and for ligus control. And what we've ended up with is a low spray environment where on average we're only spraying a half a time for whiteflies. This presents special challenges anytime you wanted to introduce a new technology, which includes predator prey ratios to your stakeholders, because it's, well, why bother? You're already spraying so little. I should say that this is a statewide average. There are cotton grown at elevation that doesn't spray for whiteflies. So where we spray for whiteflies, there's usually at least one spray being made. And so there is an opportunity for savings there, and we wish to push our stakeholders towards those gains. And in fact, getting back to that validation data set, the better decisions you can make, whether that's with additional information about your natural enemies, the more likely you are to defer a spray based on our reanalysis of all the data we collected from PCAs in Arizona, Mexico, and our historical data. And every time you can defer a spray, you're actually creating more opportunity in time and space for more natural mortality, whether that's through the natural enemies that are present or through other natural mortality factors, including physical factors, which we call haboobs, or these dry dust storms that move across the desert landscape. They can be quite dramatic. They can extend for miles. They can create winds and dust fronts that are 25 to 50 mile an hour in strength. And that's enough to literally scour whiteflies off of leaves. Now, this isn't a factor that you can count on in every field and every year, but it's certainly true to say that somewhere in some fields every year, they're impacted by these additional mortality factors. Now, anytime we're talking about changing how a PCA approaches his job, we need to understand how confident they are already in making their whitefly spray decisions. Now, these are very experienced PCAs, very professional, many of them many years of experience managing whiteflies. And I guess you could say if you're in this area of 90 to 99% certainty, you're pretty safe, you're pretty certain in the decision you're making. But really, in aggregate, about half the time they're saying they're less than certain or confident in the whitefly sprays they're making, just based on pest-based thresholds. And even some of them are willing to admit that it's no better than a coin toss sometimes. And that's in part because these whitefly control decisions are complicated by the fact that we're not looking at yield reductions associated with their activity. We're looking at threats to quality. And that's a much more subtle thing to be protecting out there. And if you probe even further and you ask them, you know, how many of your decisions are properly timed, you'll actually find that they'll admit that there's some number that are too early and there are some that are too late. And that's with the existing system. So we wish to try to work on that that uncertainty, create greater confidence in the decisions they're making by incorporating natural enemy counts. We deployed workshops throughout the Southwest region. That included Arizona, California, as well as two states initially in Mexico, Baja California and Sonora. And then this past year when we rolled it out, we included Chihuahua as well. All major cotton growing regions throughout the desert Southwest. And in the process, we asked them about their intentions to adopt once they understood what the new system was. And in general, it reflected a pretty good response. Five being, you know, definitely I will be using predator to prey ratios or biological control informed thresholds when managing whiteflies. So most of them were willing to consider trying this out. Now, as in anything, and I should say the rest of my talk is not going to be so much about the insects, the biology, or the ecology. It's about the people. There is a sociological component to this that, you know, we can create things, build it, and they will come. It won't happen unless it's supported through education or through a good understanding of what the barriers are to them adopting. And not surprisingly, the time and investment to count the predators is one thing that concerns them. Now, in this case, they're all managing Liguus using a sweep net. They're all supposed to be doing about 100 sweeps per field, and all of our measurements of these predators are based on number of natural enemies per 100 sweeps. But they still are concerned about the additional work that might be involved. A few were concerned about the accuracy of the approach. This is an important one. There was a vocal minority, certainly, I thought, well, I'm not paid enough as a consultant to do this kind of work. And then when asking growers, you'll get a certain segment of them, interestingly, a smaller number, that will say, well, we're not interested in paying our consultants anything more to do this kind of work. And then there's a solid fraction of people that simply said there are no barriers to implementing this new system. So what is this in a little more detail? If you didn't see Steve's talk an hour ago, I'll just say that, you know, thresholds are like you learned in IPM 101. When whiteflies or any pests are high, you're going to spray them. when they're low, you're not going to spray them. That's the way we learned about thresholds and how they work. We all know it's far more complicated than that. However, when they're very, very low, you probably wouldn't even bother sampling the field because you'd never be spraying it. And if they're very, very high, you don't even have to get out of the truck. You know it's time to spray. So there are these different zones, some of them that exist with great certainty, and others that exist with some uncertainty. And by adding predators to this system, we can create greater certainty in their decision making. So now we can look at predators as being low or high, and it's a ratio. It's a predator to prey ratio that we've identified in each case, and that really forms this one-to-one line between the prey and the predator. And now we still have our spray area, we still have our don't spray area, but we've created two new zones, and these really are those pucker points. These are the places where our consultants really are uncertain about whether they should be spraying or not, and they include when you're above threshold, the pest-centric threshold, but your predators are actually very high. And now with these new numeric measurements of predators, we can tell them, well, you can defer your spray and resample. So this will help them in saving money. Alternatively, and this will happen as well, there are situations where a consultant will have whiteflies that are actually below the pest-centric threshold, but the predators are also too low. And under those conditions, you actually have to advance the spray. The dynamics aren't in place for biocontrol to work. So this is supported through publications. We produce these tables. This is a nymph lookup table because they sample both large nymphs and whiteflies, so they have their prey densities, which they should be doing measurements on anyways, and then we can tell them how many predators need to be present per 100 sweeps in order to mitigate that prey density and perhaps defer a spray. There's an adult lookup table the same way. Altogether, there are eight different thresholds they could adhere to. Any one of them works independently of the other, but they do have to measure both the prey and the predators. Some entomology here. Crab spider is one of those species. Just to give you an idea of the levels we're looking at, 4 to 6 crab spiders per 100 sweeps. This is a small impidid fly, Drapetus, very small. It is identifiable in a sweep net. You can count it. This is kind of a big count, 26 to 44 per 100 sweeps. Big-eyed bugs, of course, a stalwart natural enemy in our system. We're looking only for about one big-eyed bug per 100 sweeps. Minute pirate bugs, around 5 to 8 per 100 sweeps. Colops beetles, two different species in our area. This is a flower beetle that is a good predator, 2 colops per 100 sweeps. And then lacewing larvae at about 1 to 2 lacewings per 100 sweeps. So our goal is really just to tilt the predator-prey ratios in favor of management and using this free source of pest control. And it works just like this. You count your whiteflies. If they're well below threshold, you're done. You're not going to be spraying. If you're well above threshold, it's also easier. You're simply going to be spraying and no additional information is needed. But if you're at that point of approaching threshold or you're at threshold, you're really at that point of difficulty for many of our consultants. That's where you can count the predators along with your ligus counts and your sweep net. You can focus on any one of the 6 species and any one of the 8 thresholds. If the predators are high, you can continue to defer the spray. If they're low, you're going to advance the spray. Now, our programs over the years have been very successful. We all know that BT cotton has been transformative in all of our systems. We all have access to incredible chemistry that's been deployed in the last 25 years, and that certainly takes the lion's share of source of the benefits to our industry. But if you analyze the data, which we've done, we can show that 42% of the gains in our system is actually due to biological control. Those conserved elements that are in the field that are operating because we have access to some of these selective technologies. Meanwhile, we have people around the world, and I'm glad they're doing this. I've been participating in some of these things. This is one that came out in PNAS last year. Many, many authors there that are all trying to understand what are the external factors that control pest and predator abundance in a field. And that's great. That's great that work's happening, and I'm glad it does. But in reality, we don't know what's happening in a field with even the information that's in a field, and we need to be doing more work inside the field. This is sort of supported a little bit by this chart that Steve Castle and Steve Nerano published a few years ago that looked at Journal Decon Ent articles that were published over a 40-year period, about 100 articles that cover thresholds, about 60 of them that actually integrate those with sampling plans, Only three of those, however, are biological control based. That's not enough activity for being 60 years into the integrated control concept that Stern and others created in 1959. We really need to do better, we need to do more. In the end, I'll just conclude, say that we now have validated 8 independent biological control informed thresholds for 6 different generalist predators in Arizona cotton. Our managers need better certainty and confidence in making their decisions. This helps them do that, helps them save money. And we've distributed this now over 6 U.S. Cotton and Mexican states. Thank you. And thanks to our supporters. I'm a little over, sorry about that.
No, not a problem. I'm going next.
Oh, yeah.
Let's all thank Peter.